You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the lead play in our offense.
Yes, our YN or a tight end to open up somewhere between 6 feet and 9 feet, get an isolation with the linebacker. Tell the tackle to take the defensive end if he's over him. If he's not, to drive down on the first man to his inside. If the YN has the linebacker taken out, he cuts inside. If the YN has the linebacker in, he comes all the way around. You look at this play where we're trying to get a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
What's up, guys? Welcome into what's supposed to be Good Morning Lambeau. Wrong logo, wrong intro. We're off to a roaring start here. Hope everybody.
Good morning.
Hope everyone's having an awesome Sunday morning. Joined alongside Tim live in Green Bay, we got Jacob in Wisconsin. Check us out on packernet.com. Find me on Twitter at Packers_access. You guys can tell it was a late night last night with the festivities here at the Bailey Ranch. But Tim, you look good, man. You look like you're ready to go this morning,
brother. Yeah, don't I? Thanks.
Yeah. Jacob, how you
doing? We'll do all right. Got the diesel going.
I always think it's great when as we're going live, Tim's like fixing his hair, straightening up.
There's no fixing this, dude.
Yeah, I'm on my fourth espresso over here going, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? So, yeah, we've got a lot of stuff we can get into. I doubt we'll get to everything. Things first, a couple of names kind of popped up. No, Eric, what are you, Eric Sutherland? I'm sitting in church watching. I'm getting some weird looks. Unbelievable, man.
Hold on. Paul says it's because your fly is open, Eric.
Paul Robertson, that's because your fly is open, Eric. You love to see it. Now, you don't love to see the fly open. You just love to see the banter already here on Sunday morning. But anyway, we've got some names flying around. Let's go rapid fire here. Jim Nagy, you guys know, does a lot of work with the Senior Bowl. And the Senior Bowl playing a big role in the Packers draft every year. They draft a significant amount of players from the Senior Bowl, as do pretty much every other team in the league. It's kind of the cream of the crop, as Macho Man Randy Savage would say. Once, I'm sure he was not on the booger sugar there at the time either. If you guys watch those videos, my goodness. But that's a story for another day. Jim Nagy, however you say his name, says, been tons of talk this year about this year's offensive tackle and center classes. But there's also some quality guard prospects that scouts feel could be immediate day one starters. One name that's come up repeatedly in conversations with NFL teams since the Senior Bowl is TCU guard/tackle Brandon Coleman. He went on to post some accolades, one of which was 34 starts in the past there. I'm going to share my board real quick and just show you where he sits on the board. We'll see if we can zoom in here, touch, and make it a little more readable. But you see Brandon Coleman, I've got in the 165 spot, PFF grade in 2022. He was the 25th highest graded tackle. In 2023, he dropped all the way down to 415. That kind of feels like a Jaden Reed top, does it not, fellas? That really good performance. Yes, he can. In here in spirit, obviously. When we took the information down back in January, the consensus big board had him around the 171 spot. The 33rd team has him in the 130 spot. So, again, he lands at 165 on my board. As far as the vertical board goes. Now, I'm going to share the horizontal board real quick and show you kind of what pick he may be worthy of there. So let's pop this up here, and let's see if we can find him is Brandon Coleman, right, guys? So here is the offensive tackle column. Obviously, we'll start at the top and kind of work our way down. We're looking for Brandon Coleman. Brandon Coleman, sir, where are you?
I think that they're projecting him to kick inside. Oh, there he is.
Okay. Yeah, they're definitely – I think that's pretty much the consensus, Jacob. You hit the nail on the head. I think he probably will be an NFL guard. But, again, I like to focus on where the snaps were, you know, at college. That way we know, okay, here's what he did in college. Now project him where you want. So, again, 161.8, the final grade on my board. He lands in the 112 spot, two placeholder spots, which suggests he's worthy of the 110th pick. So probably as soon as you crack that top 100, might be a chance that Brandon Coleman flies off the board there. He could drop. He could be higher, which we'll kind of talk about how draft boards differ here in a second. But you got anything on him, Jacob?
Yeah. Apparently, this guy may be the strongest lineman in the draft, is what they've said, that he is just a physical mauler, kind of that mean streak type of guy. Personally, I would love to have him on the team. TCU is, I think, a great organization. And he, like, I would like him to kick into guard. I would picture him perfectly slide into that right guard. I mean, if everything works up, and like we said, we can't just plug and play guys like it's Madden, but
right.
He just has like the physical intangibles to be able to, in my opinion, to slide in there and just be an absolute beast of a man. Also, we figured out why Eric actually goes to church. He says, "I come to church to pinch a little cash on the plate to cover my Patreon." Oh, Lord mercy.
Bro. I would be tied into stealing God's money there, right? I appreciate that, Eric.
I find it hard to believe that when Eric walks through the church doors, he doesn't start smoldering immediately.
He's one of those guys, he walks in the door and he pushes on the frame, looks at the ceiling a little bit, makes sure stuff not crumbling, you know?
And he's listening to us on his phone on speaker instead of with an earbud in or something.
Exactly. Looking at Brandon Coleman here on the thresholds, the reason he's not lit up green on mine, his RAS was a 998. So just crushed it as a guard, it looks like. And he's 22 years old, but did not participate in the shuttle, did not participate in the three cone, and he does have tackle experience. So there's nothing that would suggest he wouldn't meet the thresholds for the Packers, but it is incomplete, if that makes sense. So
he does run a sub 540
for a big boy. And again, Jim Nagy talking about him is like, all right, we may have something here, you know.
Just seems like that type of athletic pulling guard that maybe we like in this offense. I mean, I think Matt LaFleur is going to look at his RAS and say, or Goody, yeah. I should say, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Goody is Goody salivating, no doubt about it, man. All right. Another name that got mentioned by Easton Butler on Twitter said the Packers met with Washington defensive lineman. And I'll try to get this right here. It's a little bit tough. It's Zion Tupola Fatui.
Who?
Tupola Fatui. All right. Practiced that 500 times before the show. Crushed it every time. Went live. Absolutely botched it. So that's the way that goes. So they've got him listed as a defensive lineman. You guys know on my board, when I say defensive line, I'm talking about interior defensive tackle, right? And we can kind of change the board now to say D-tackle, edge, as opposed to D-line and edge. And the reason we do that is because when you're in a 4-3, they are specifically defensive tackles. When you're in a 3-4, you can have defensive ends, but they're still considered interior defensive linemen, if that makes sense. So, because they're typically playing inside the 4-tech. But let's go find him on the board real quick. I know he's much lower than Coleman, obviously. And we got him listed as an edge. I think some of the weights on the websites I've seen, he was at 244 pounds. So there's a chance that maybe someone tries him at a sandbacker top. I doubt it, though. But here you go. We got him with a 334.5 grade, worthy of the 172nd pick, according to my board. Okay, so again, when we say worthy of those picks, keep in mind, it could push him way down. It's just simply I would have no problem with him being taken at that spot because of how that whole area sits on the horizontal board. And that's why the horizontal board is so important there. So, Tim, you got anything on our boy Zion? Anything you want to add there?
33rd team has him 266th overall, 26th at the position group. Mm-hmm. Strengths are ability to play in space and effort, which is something you like to see, right? A guy that's going to go full throttle every single snap, not taking a snap off. So you like to see that. But yeah, he's an interesting guy because like his 6'3", 244, I mean, he's got that body type, right? He could probably play a couple of different spots, but he could be late round value for somebody, mm-hmm. I think. I don't know. I don't see too much else on here. Weaknesses, pass rush plan, hand usage. So things that can be coached up and worked on. So
yeah. And where did you say they had him again? I'm sorry.
33rd team has him 266.
Got it.
Good stuff. 26 at the position. They have him listed as an edge.
Nice. Check this out. He's sitting in the 248 spot on my vertical board.
Nice.
625th highest graded edge defender in 2022, jumped to 475 in 2023. The consensus big board in January had him in the 109 spot. And then as soon as the season was over, it just went volatile. He tanked, came back up a touch, tanked again. So that's one of those guys that back then, as soon as the college football season wrapped up, he was a borderline top 100 pick amongst the consensus big board. Yeah, and like you said, 33rd team, 266. And then, so it's just that kind of piques my interest a bit. Like, okay, what and Easton Butler mentioning that the Packers met with Washington defensive lineman Zion, right? So this isn't just like, okay, who is this guy? The Packers are obviously showing some interest. And it says, with the Packers and Jets stand out from the rest per Justin M underscore NFL. So it sounds like the Packers and the Jets are showing the most interest. That could be a guy late in the draft there that we potentially take him as to help fill that void there with Kingsley and Ibarri coming off that ACL.
There's a guy.
What do you think about him, Jake?
So correct me if I'm wrong. Is he opposite or plays on the same line as Braylon Trice?
Yes. And there's a couple of guys on that Washington front that played. There's Braylon Trice, and then there's – who's the other guy? Gosh, there was another one.
I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name. So my point was that, like, is this maybe one of those situations where we've talked about, you know, the Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy thing, or the Malik Nabers / who's the other guy, Robinson or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Are these guys that good, or is half the defense worrying about the other guy? You know what I'm saying? Or has half the offense worrying about the other guy? So I like the measurables. I'll be honest with you. I've never heard this name until right now. So I don't know anything about him other than his measurables and the fact that, like I said, he plays with some pretty decent other players. So, you know, now he's on my radar, which is cool. That's why we do these exercises to figure out who these guys are that maybe we don't see. But I could honestly, like you talked about, I could see the Packers. That'd be one of those picks where, like, it's, I don't know, maybe what would you think, fifth, sixth round, something like that, where you're all of a sudden it's like Zion Tupola Fatui, and you're like, what?
That's what's interesting is like I said, when you lay it out in horizontal form, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, 172nd. We could be somewhere around that. Right? So it's like when you look at it from that regard, what is the 170th pick? What is that? What round would that be roughly?
Fifth-ish, isn't it?
What's that?
I said a round fifth, I believe.
Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, five. The number comes out to 5.3. So, yeah, probably early fifth round that you would potentially take him. So, again, it just depends on, like you said, too, you know, when we talk about two players playing in the same spot, especially when you're talking about like a Byron Murphy and a Tavondre Sweat, who were, you know, going into draft season at the top of the consensus big board, like they're in the first round. When you talk about those guys, it's like, okay, which one's the bust? But it's very rarely when you get one that, like, this guy is kind of much lower, right, than a Braylon Trice. And it's like, what if he's the reason or one of the reasons that Braylon Trice got some attention taken away from him? You know what I mean? So it could be one of those late round guys. So it kind of works both ways there for sure. So
does it seem like he's a little bit undersized though for our 4-3 to even play on that D line? Like you talked about, like, does he have to flip to a Sam or maybe a Will even? Like,
see, that's where it gets interesting because we've never seen Goody build a 4-3 roster. We never seen Ted Thompson build a 4-3 roster. So like, they may go smaller on the edge with those three stack backers back there, especially if they're going to play like a 4-3 under and move the Sam up, you know, just like a half a yard off of the ball, then you can play with a lighter edge, right? That's what's interesting because, the 34 is very, very structured in how you use those players, right? Because it's kind of that two gap front for the most part. But when you get into hybrid defenses, everybody looks at it different. Like Baltimore builds their roster different than the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots technically switched to a 34, but they ran such a hybrid during that dynasty run that it's like, okay, they're doing things a little bit different than Baltimore. Green Bay was just kind of working your traditional Dom Capers style 34 defense, and it never really changed. And then you get in, of course, into the 4-3 defenses. Many of them are different. When you look at Robert Saleh and what he does with the Jets, and you look at what the Niners have done, and you look at what the Texans have done, I would have to agree with you, Jacob, because it seems like Will Anderson, this guy's much smaller than Will Anderson, right? Will Anderson is like the quintessential. He's going to be an edge defender for us in our 4-3 defense in Houston. So, yeah, think of Bosa. This guy's quite a bit smaller than Bosa in San Francisco, right, Jacob? So, like, that's – it kind of feels like he's undersized, yeah. So, just interesting to kind of see what they may do because, again, you may draft him, throw him back there at Sam if you get him late in the draft, and who knows, you might have you a Sam backer and a situational Sam backer too, not necessarily just a play in and play out kind of stack backer type. So going to be interesting though, man, for sure. And yeah, so let's do this. Since we're kind of talking about boards, let's go to what Bill Belichick said on the Pat McAfee show. And let's start there. He talks about how draft boards differ. And again, Bill Belichick, I understand some people don't like Belichick. The guy has got 6 Super Bowl rings as a head coach, 2 more as a defensive coordinator. People forget that. So he's actually got 8 Super Bowl rings as a coach. He's been coaching since 1975. And I just love that he chose to go on Pat McAfee's draft show over the normal media. It just cracks me up. You know they're going, you I just love to see it.
So, both sides. I'm pretty sure people at ESPN are sick of Pat.
Oh, they hate him, bro.
So he's so non-conforming, mm-hmm. and he's so not like toeing the company line. And I think they both know it.
What people are realizing now, every time someone goes on Pat McAfee's show as a guest, you go, all right, we know where they stand in the argument, or else they wouldn't go on the show, right? So you're getting some of the all-time greats. Tom Brady has been on his show. Bill Belichick, obviously the greatest quarterback in the history of the game, the greatest coach in the history of the game. Like, you got all of these that were just the best at their craft. And all the, I haven't met many former players. I say met. I haven't heard many former players speak out against Pat. They all are like, hey, we like what Pat does. He represents the football community the right way, basically. Like, this is how players think. This is how coaches think. He's had all kinds of general managers on the show. And then, of course, you got the other talking heads that are constantly like, look at this doofus. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's like, bro, are you even looking at who is siding with him? Not necessarily in his specific opinion, but just how he looks at the game. I think it's awesome, man. So, yeah, Jacob, you're right. He ruffles a lot of feathers, and anybody knows me and my background. What are you laughing about?
Put Eric's comment up.
I'm putting it up.
Bro, it is pretty true. Eric Sutherland says ESPN is the View of sports television. I'm sorry. That's a Photoshop waiting to happen. We got to get a couple of those guys with Joy Behar's face on their body and all that stuff.
Whoopi.
Yeah, a little Whoopi out there.
Oh, guys, man.
Anyway, let's go to the
– call me anything you want, but don't call me that.
That's not the GOAT. That's my Uncle Rick from Colorado right there. Here we go. Here's the GOAT.
I think, Pat, you know, when we look at our draft board on Thursday night, I think the one thing that everybody has to understand is our draft board will look different than every other draft board in the league, just like every team's draft board will look different than every other draft board in the league. Not any of them are the same. Even at the very top, they won't be the same. So what you're looking at is what you feel like is going to help your team.
It's important to put that out there because how many people do you see that when you share your board, you share your mock, you share how you see the draft, oh, you're way off on this one. It's like, okay, Threshold King, calm down. Like, there's not 2 coaches in the National Football League, 2 general managers in the National Football League whose boards are exactly the same. but yours is the be all end all. Like it just, yeah. Mute those guys, mute them and block them.
Team and how you've got them organized, and everybody else has that same view. So you can kind of think, well, this is what some other people are thinking, but you never really know that. And so the recruiting thing is a little bit the same thing, I'm sure. You know, I haven't done college recruiting, but I can imagine that, yeah, it'd be great to bring 20 guys in. But if you got a top prospect and he can't come in that weekend, you're not going to drop him. You're going to find another time when he can visit, when he can, you know, do whatever he does, bring his parents or girlfriend or whatever you can fit into his schedule. If he's good enough, you'll make room for him. So, you know, a lot of that just depends on, you know, how schedules work out in players that are in high demand.
Hey, be who you can afford to be, Coach. Yeah. And those trophies behind you right there provide a lot of happiness for this man that has a question for you. He actually has
including the Emmy?
Yeah. Top 100. Oh, yeah. 100 years. Loved it all.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, so he also got, by the way, an Emmy for his performance there with the all-time top 100 that the NFL Network did. So, like, just absolutely. You notice a different Belichick here, guys? Like how he's talking? He's like funny. A normal dude. What's that?
He's funny.
Oh, he's and people this is been,
he's been funny for years. People just he's the smartest man alive because he never let the media know anything. He never gave them a freaking 10 cent coin. He never let them know anything. I'll never forget like when that lady, she's like, "What's your favorite part of the football season?" And everybody goes, "Everything. Everything's great. Like, I love everything." She's like, "I asked you a question earlier this week. Do you want to revitalize?" He goes, "No."
And you know, that's like the big misconception about him. And now the players, if you guys, I'm telling you, you got to watch the Dynasty. It is wild. But they basically, the Krafts produced that whole thing. And Robert and Jonathan Kraft, they just, the underlying message is along with the book, The Dynasty. And it's just, this big doofus was just in the way the whole time is basically the vibe you get. It's like, this dude has got 8 Super Bowl rings, 6 for your organization, and he had nothing to do with you guys winning those. It's just wild, absolutely wild. So, and the players are now speaking out is what I was getting at. His former players are now speaking out going, "Hey, no, this is a hit piece on Coach Belichick. They love playing for him." And when you ask him, you know, "Did you hate Belichick?" He's like, "I don't think you ever like your coaches." Like, If you locked your coach when you were in the heat of battle, then they weren't coaching you. They were patting you on the rear end like you were a little child. Like a true coach, my coach, Coach Morris, growing up, he's in the Kentucky High School Baseball Hall of Fame. Bro, I couldn't stand him. And I get 2 years out of high school, and I'm like, that dude knew what the hell he was talking about. I just wasn't mature enough to grab it, right? So, yeah, I don't think anybody is just like, oh, he's my best friend. If they're a real coach, it's someone who's going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
I was just going to say, dude, like, that bugs me. Same thing. I had a football coach that coached me from sixth grade all the way from varsity. He just happened to move up coincidentally with our class. And he never was. I mean, I ended up living with the guy, actually, in my senior year of high school because I was, you know, whatever. But he was not my friend. He was an absolute critic of everything I did. And like you talked about, like at the end of the day, you have to be humble with yourself and be like, so is he actually ripping on me or is he trying to make me a better person? And I think that every single one of Belichick's players understands, like you said, when they take a step back, they're like, no, he was coaching me. He wasn't ragging me. He wasn't dogging me. He was coaching me. And if you're the type of player that can't take coaching, well, that's probably why you're not going to be in the league that long, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's just cool to see the players kind of come to his defense. But again, Belichick is still like, you know, he's looking to get a job next year. So he's still in the hunt. He's still grading players. Like Michael Lombardi said the other day, he does a physical write-up on every single potential prospect every year, still doing it to this day. So he built his draft board as if he was still coaching this year. That's the draft board they're going to be using on McAfee Show. So that's what's going to be on my screen during the draft.
Watch how quick Belichick gets a call during the season if one of these coaches just screws up and you have a dumpster fire of a start and you're looking to make a change. I bet you old Billy's phone rings pretty quickly.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. So another thing that got kind of brought up that to me it applies to the Packers. When you've got a successful franchise, you're always picking in the back half of the draft, right? Like last year was odd because we had the 13th pick. It's like, okay, this is kind of uncharted territory, right? So here is a question from Boston Connor, huge Patriots fan. He showed it last week. He got tattooed on his bicep, William Stephen Belichick, right? He got Bill Belichick's name tattooed on his bicep. He's one of those massholes we talk about that just is crazy about the Patriots. But here's his question talking about picking last. And listen how Bill talks about kind of working the board and how picking last, you know, can come into play for a team.
One thing that always happened for New England, especially around this draft time, was, you know, we didn't get very excited as fans just because when you're picking so late in the draft, you know, first of all, Pat mentioned it, you got to wait 45 hours to get to the pick. And then a lot of the times, you know, you would trade back or trade out of the first round because, you know, you just didn't have anything to really take. What is the mindset going into a draft when you are picking that late? Because, you know, this is something that your buddy Andy Reid has to deal with now, because they're going to be, you know, 28 and up going forward for the next, you know, 10, 15 years, who knows. But what is kind of the thought process around that? And when do you know, like during that first round, hey, we're trading out, there's no point to stay here?
Right. That's a great question. And the answer is every year is different and you really don't know. When you're picking at the end of the draft, and I got this question, you know, from people in organization and so forth a lot, you know, what are we going to do? We're picking 28th, we're picking 32nd. You tell me who's going to be there, and then I can tell you what we're going to do, but you just really don't know. There's so many teams in front of you, it's just impossible to predict. So did I think we would ever draft Vince Wilfork? I thought there was no chance he would be on the board when we picked. I didn't think Hightower would be there, so we traded up and got him. I didn't think Chandler Jones would be there, so we traded up and got him. You know, Logan Mankins was there, and we waited it out and took Mankins at 32. But you just don't know what's going to be at the end of the draft when you're picking there. So sometimes you see somebody fall in and say, okay, it's worth it to trade and get up and get the guy. Other times you kind of wait and see who slides through. Sometimes you feel like, I'm taking this guy, you know, there's not much there at the end of the first round. Let me move back, you know, a few spots and try to either, you know, accumulate some capital or, you know, take the same player or the same quality of player that you're going to take. You got two or three guys you like there, just back up and take a little bit more for it. I think the fifth year option is an issue at the end of the first round for the high priced positions. So obviously quarterback, which is what the Ravens did when they took Lamar Jackson. They traded in our spot at 32 to take Jackson and got the fifth year option on him, or cornerback, offensive tackle, you know, maybe even pass rusher. But when you talk about the tackles and the pass rushers and the receivers at that point, you're probably talking about the fifth or sixth guy. But, you know, look, if it's a guy who's going to end up making a lot of money at that, at one of those high quality positions, then it's worth it probably to be up in the first round and potentially have a fifth year option. So that's a, sometimes a factor too of there's a little bit of savings from the first round to the second round because that fifth year option is included in the first round.
All right. So that's, to me, that's fascinating talk about the fifth year option. We've talked about it in the past, right? Like, the reason teams want to get up in the first round to get that option for the fifth-year option is you can save money by slapping a fifth-year option on a guy who just turns into an absolute stud, right? You've got kind of that leverage. To me, it's the fifth-year option is a mini franchise tag, and then if they are an absolute superstar, then you've got back-to-back years you can have franchise tags. So essentially, you've got a player that you took in the first round. You've got rights to them for 3 years after their contract expires, which is pretty wild when you think about it from that standpoint. Now, immediately you go, okay, what positions are we drafting in the first round here? Consistent basis, it's some of the highest paid positions, right? Talk about Eric Stokes, cornerback, one of those higher paid positions, right? It's kind of a premium right now what teams are willing to pay. Lucas Van Ness, edge is at the top of the heap. Like, it's the most expensive position on defense. You talk about, you know, tackles. Tackles are a big talking point and where the depth is. We'll talk about specific depth here in a second and what Coach Belichick had to say about that. But tackles are, outside of quarterback, tackles are like the most expensive position, right? So that's why teams are willing to kind of take a chance on those positions, and they're what we consider premium positions. Again, it's not what you or I think is the most important position. It's where does the money go? The old saying, right? You want to know where someone's priorities lie. Look at their calendar and look at their checkbook. Look at the NFL team's checkbook and where are they spending the most money. That's the most valuable position. Not knucklehead 345 on Twitter that thinks, no, I think guard is more important because I'm smart. It's like that's where the money is being spent in the league. Therefore, that's where the priority lies. But what do you think about that, man? Because we are kind of picking at the end of the draft, right, Tim? Like, we're 25th. We're not 32, but 25th. Right down at the very bottom, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And we may be trading back. We don't know. You know, right. lots of different variables. But no, I think what Coach Belichick said there is spot on, you know, and very honest rather than trying to sugarcoat it. You know, the fact is you don't know. There are a lot of variables. I have full faith in Goody on draft day. And I feel like the Packers war room is going to be fully equipped to drop some bombs and get us some more talent. But yeah, I mean, it's an art form picking later, but that's a position, at least from a fan standpoint, I hope we're in a lot. I hope we don't have a number one pick anytime soon. Cause we're playing a lot of postseason ball. So, it'll be fun to see what happens this year.
Definitely. And when you look at the horizontal board, think about us picking 25th, and would teams be interested in trading up for our pick to nab a quarterback to get that fifth year option? Quarterback is the most expensive position in the league. You guys, you know that. It goes without saying. But that's what Belichick was talking about. Like, they wanted Lamar Jackson, so they traded up. They being the Ravens, so they traded up with him at 32 so they could get that fifth-year option, right? Worked out perfect for the Ravens. So if you look at this year's draft, you got Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels. I've got them in that order. Many people have Jaden Daniels above Drake May. On my board, I've got Drake May above Jaden Daniels. They're right there in the same tier, though. You see Drake May's got a 6.7, and Jaden Daniels has got a 9.2. So in increments of 5, they would be like in that micro tier. They would even be in the same tier. And then, of course, Caleb Williams is one tier higher. So it's looking like those three will go 1, 2, 3. There's absolutely no chance that one of those three quarterbacks drop out of the top 10. I think we would all agree with that. So when we slide on down the board, the next one, in my opinion, is Michael Penix Jr. Now, in the public eye, it's definitely J.J. McCarthy. But again, I don't adjust my board for what's going on right now, what's the big rumor mill, all that stuff, because a lot of that stuff is smoke and mirrors, which we'll get to a clip in a minute too, where Belichick talks about agent speak. And when you really want to key in is like 24, 48 hours before the draft starts is when stuff becomes real. Everything else is kind of let's pump our guy up. Other teams are trying to get other teams off of those guys. So Michael Penix Jr. could potentially be one. He's worthy of the 25th pick, according to my board here. Then you got Bo Nix. I mean, really, really close behind him is Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy. So you've got potentially 5 quarterbacks that could go in the first round. Slam dunk 3 are going in the first. I think 4 is a pretty safe bet. So if what we're looking to see here is if these guys start flying off the board, and let's say let's say JJ McCarthy goes fourth and it's somewhere in the middle of the first round. We need to be praying to sweet baby Jesus that there's another team that has a first round grade on Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix, and we could potentially trade down. Because I know everybody on this show, Jacob, we're all team trade down, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
Did you hear that?
Like Bill said, though, I mean, it depends on who, tell me who's there, tell me who's available, and tell me, you know, like you said. And I think five may go in the first round this year. I really do. Because people are sleeping on the fact that, like, Oakland needs a quarterback. The Giants probably need a quarterback. A lot of teams that maybe are saying they don't want a quarterback or need a quarterback are probably really hoping that a quarterback falls to them at some point. Or, like they talked about, they can move up in a certain way. And like you talked about, that fifth-year option is such a huge deal. I mean, it really is. It's such a buffer because it's like the double-edged sword of moving up into the first round to get a quarterback. You waste a lot of draft capital. Maybe you waste a lot of time, you know, on a guy that maybe doesn't pan out. But that fifth year option gives you that little buffer where it's like, yeah, it wasn't that bad of an option. Because if he does work out, the back end of that is you're saving so much money. You know what I mean? You're saving so much draft capital in the future. So,
yeah. Definitely. No doubt about it. And many people were asking about my board. I'm really surprised at how many people are interested in having a copy of my board, which is kind of cool. I thought I was the only nerd that really got into this stuff at this level. And what I would rather people do rather than want to get a copy of my board is build your own board. You know what I mean? Like, get into it that much. That's what it's all about. But anyway, we had a Nodat Mike in the Patreon group actually asked for a copy. He says, is there any chance that we could get a copy of your final board exclusive to the PTA Patreon posse? So we're going to do that. We're going to get that in PDF form for y'all as soon as it's finished. I'm hoping to have it out by Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll send it over to our Patreon group. And again, if you guys want to join that Patreon group, just some extra content. We're in there constantly talking about the show and what we may or may not talk about in the next show. There's going to be exclusive content in there. But yeah, there's a link in the description of this video that'll send you to our Patreon group, or you can just go to Patreon and search Packer Fan Total Access. And anyone who is a contributor there in Patreon, you're going to be entered into contests to kind of win autograph memorabilia. We got a really cool picture we're going to be giving away too here in a couple of weeks, which we're probably going to attach a charity to that one so we can help raise some money for a charity. We're going to try to find one where someone needs a little bit of help. But nonetheless, want to give a shout out to our newest Patreon members. That is Mike Berry, Boz, Will RVA, and M. Smitty. Thank you guys for supporting the show. We appreciate that for sure. And the big giveaway we got coming up here is going to be round one of the draft, right? On our draft show here. First of all, we're going to be doing, like I said, a draft party for the entirety of the draft. The goal is to be live all seven rounds. Okay. So there may be breaking points where we have to step away and you're just going to see a chair spinning like the guys did the other night when the show ended. We won't find that. But anyway. So,
man. We're going to give info.
We'll try to be live for all that. And then round one, we're going to be putting everyone who's a Patreon member on the wheel, right? And spinning that, the pinky wheel. It's now created, so we'll share that image here in the next show or two we do. But we're going to be giving away an autographed Paul Hornung jersey. It's got all his accolades sewn on as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So, again, if you guys want to support, you can hop in the Patreon group there too. So
Eric Sutherland is on a roll today.
Eric's on another level today. I don't think I can put that one up. Maybe
somebody had their Wheaties this morning.
Yeah, exactly. Out of control, man. So what's that?
So you see that one there? He wants you to
let's keep it down for a minute. Yeah. You think I should read it? What do you think, guys?
It's bad.
I think it's appropriate. Yeah. Eric Sutherland said, I want a copy of your board autographed Clayton. It would be like having a Playboy magazine at 14. Out of mind. Y'all are out of control. It's too early for this, man. It's way too early for this. All right. Anything you guys want to add before we go back to Coach Belichick? Yeah, all from the church pew is what Doug says. I'm sorry, you can take that Kirby down the street. We ain't buying it. Eric is not sitting in church right now. That's not a true story.
I hope he is, though. I swear.
You think God never farted?
For perfect drop.
You think God never farted?
Tim said, let's hit it twice just for good measure. So here's Belichick talking about specific depth in this draft, okay, and kind of where they see some of the depth at. The big thing you keep hearing is it could be one of the better quarterback drafts, right? It looks like there's at least going to be three that people consider potential franchise quarterbacks, right? Potential, all right? Potential. You never know what's going to happen. Could be the worst quarterback class in the history of the game. But as it sits right now, it sounds like it's shaping up like people believe it's one of the stronger ones. You've also got a really, really wide receiver heavy draft, and you got a really heavy offensive tackle draft here, okay? So one of the better classes in that regard in recent memory. But here's Coach Belichick talking about specific depth in this year's draft.
Should we be paying attention to all these people in the next week and a half leading up to this thing? And is the O-tackle wide receiver the group that is going to be stealing the show whenever we come to next week's first round?
Well, I definitely think there's a lot of depth at those two positions. You know, they should go quite deep into the first round and probably carry over into the second round. I imagine there are teams near the top of the draft that are looking at filling one position in the first round and then either coming back and getting a wide receiver or tackle in the second round, you know, assuming that somebody will be left. But you never know. Draft's always full of surprises. It could go a lot of different directions. But, you know, doesn't look like, you know, a lot of tight ends or running backs at the top of the draft. And then defensively, probably not the same depth on the board that there was last year, the last couple of years, at least not at the top. So, but it'll always be interesting to see how things work out and trades can, you know, that can skew it a little bit. But overall, you know, a lot of, as usual, a lot of good young prospects. And I would say that, you know, just at this point in time, a little over a week from the first round, I think teams are probably starting to really get things pulled together now. There's just a ton of information that comes in there in March and April when all your scouts are out, probably at least a dozen scouts on every team. So multiply all the information times, you know, times 12 or so of reports coming in, new information. Then on top of that, you've got the medical, you've got the security, you've got the you know, all the scouts reports all being compiled and accumulated. And now this last week or 10 days or so is where you really sit as an organization and sort through it and sift it out. And there's always a little bit of contradiction, but you got to figure out where you're going to, you know, where you're going to place your chips, what you're going to believe, what you're not going to believe. And I'd say the biggest newsmakers here quietly are the agents. Nobody wants their player to get picked higher than them. So a lot of the information, I think, that comes to the media about, you know, who's going to draft who, how high they're going to go, is, you know, a lot of media driven. So, you know, when the agent hears, well, you know, my player could go anywhere from, you know, the second or the third round, you add one to that and say, well, you know, these GMs or these teams are talking about taking my guy in the first round. I've never done that. I've never told an agent, hey, we're going to take your guy in this round. We're going to take your guy with this, you know, with the 27th pick or the 31st pick or whatever pick it is we have. I don't think there's too many teams that do that. But I think the agents will say, hey, my guy's going to go at 31 to this team. My team guy's going to go at 17 to that team, that type of thing. And then that just generates interest in their players. So I think you got to sift that out. But as you get closer to draft day, sometimes – teams get closer to figuring out what they're going to do. There is information that can leak out of the organizations in one way or another that can give you some insight into what they're going to do. I think it's a little early for that, but when you get into the last, you know, I'd say 12 or less hours before the draft, sometimes that information can be very, very accurate and helpful.
So, yeah, I completely missed that. I thought he said 24 to 48 hours. He said 12 hours. So, like, leading right up to the draft. And again, we're talking about how the board is constantly doing this, Jacob. People are up and down, up and down. Why is that? You got agents trying to put information out. You've got people in the media that think they know the truth, and all these smoke screens are coming out. I know 110% this has happened in the past. Teams have put false narratives out there in the public. Like, hey, we're on this guy. Telling a reporter, hey, man, you know, if they call and say, hey, you got anything new? Yeah, we're actually looking at this player here at number 12. What Coach Belichick said. I don't think there's any teams that are putting out that information, at least honestly, right? Yeah. They're constantly trying to get the board to fluctuate in the angle that they want it to. But go ahead, Jacob. What you got, Bubba?
oh man, as I'm listening to that, I kind of just had like this weird realization is that when you look at guys, whether it be people in the sports industry, guys that have hit that level, like a Belichick, or people that are politicians, or maybe people that have like seen behind the veil, they realize the media is complete BS. They realize that it's literally a tool. And the rest of us are just sitting here going, oh, yeah, give me more, give me more, give me more. It's right. All BS, man. It's all just a smokescreen. And it's so interesting because you can put that parallel across sports, politics, life, everything. And you just sit there and realize that we are being fed, force-fed, a bunch of horse manure. And it's just crazy how, like, when you take a step back and you realize it and you just think about how Bill's thinking, it's like, obviously, every team has an agenda. Obviously, every agent has an agenda. Every news organization has an agenda. They're going to tell you anything that they think that you want to hear to help their cause. So that is like very, very, I guess, good to think about or important to think about, to take a step back and be like, who's telling me the information and does this information benefit or hurt them? And then you have to kind of like, you know, it's like drinking from a fire hose and trying to figure out what the heck is going on here. It's just, it's stupid.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So, Tim, sir, what do you think about Belichick said what he said there, man?
I love how he's like, well, I never started any rumors. I would never. Yeah, right, Bill. Yeah, yeah, right. They don't call you the GOAT for no reason. You don't get to that level without playing a little hardball, right? You got, you know, it's I don't know what you call it. It's not dirty. It's part of the game, man, right? You gotta, there's a little manipulation going on here and there. In the first part of the comments, I like the way he talked about, you know, these, some of these recruits or these draft picks, about how, you know, if you target a guy, you're going to do what you can to meet with him. You're going to meet with his family. You're going to move your schedule around. So the thing I respect about Belichick is he's a guy who does care about his players, and absolutely, he's going to advocate for whoever he, you know, had his sights set on. And if that means using the media's manipulation to his advantage, I'm sure Coach Belichick's done that a handful of times over his career. But I just thought that was funny for him to just say that, oh, you know, I don't do that, but some teams do that. It's like, right. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. No, I would never do that. So when you look at what he's talking about with depth, he said wide receiver and offensive tackle, right? So let's look at how the board sits here horizontally. Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers right at the top of the wide receiver position, okay? Let's hop over to the offensive tackle column. You got Joe Alt. You got Fuaga from Oregon State. You got J.C. Latham from Alabama. You got Fashanu from Penn State. You got Fontana from Washington. You got Amarius Mims from Georgia. You got Graham Barton, which I think we would all agree is probably interior offensive line, but again, he got all of his snaps at left tackle there in the last 2 years, so that's what we went with here just to kind of show, hey, look, here's where his experience is, and we're projecting him to be an interior offensive lineman. Jordan Morgan at left tackle out of Arizona. Then you hop down to Ladd McConkey at wide receiver. Okay, I've got him worthy of the 32nd pick. So there within – first round grades, as far as I say first round grades, not technically a first round grade, but worthy of a first round pick. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4 wide receivers, in my opinion. Now, some people would put many people, almost all people will put Michael Thomas Jr. up there too. That's not where he landed on my board. I'm not going to change it because of the public's opinion, but just keep in mind, Michael Thomas Jr. probably going first round, maybe even top 10. Like he's that people, there's that many people that are excited about him, right? So, we got 4 wide receivers, and we got 8 offensive tackles that look like they're probably going to go in the first round. So that's what, Jacob, 12 players plus the 3 quarterbacks, right, which is 15 players. So you do the math. We're probably going to have a decent shot of getting somewhere between the 6th and the 10th best defensive player in this draft. If we go defense, Tim's like, yes, but the other thing he mentioned, notice how he said the tight end, it's not very top heavy, right? You got Brock Bowers, in my opinion, is worthy of the 2nd pick, although I know no one's going to take a tight end there. That's just where he grades out at. You got Jatavion Sanders, in my opinion, coming in worthy of the 19th pick. And then it goes down to Cade Stover, worthy of the 35th pick. And then look how it drops off again. So that's what he's talking about. Everything that Belichick just said about how this draft lines up, our horizontal board confirms that, which is kind of cool. So sometimes you hear people like that say stuff, and you look at your board and go, oh yeah, I must be off on something. But it seems like everything's lining up pretty evenly here. So yeah, Eric Sutherland says a good shot at getting a corner, right? Let's hop over and look at the corners. You got Quinyon Mitchell. I think we would all agree he's going to be gone. Kool-Aid McKinstry, I think he'll be available. There's a good chance he'll be available. Nate Wiggins, Terrion Arnold, I think will probably be gone based off what I heard. I like Kool-Aid McKinstry better than Terrion Arnold. That's just me personally. I know I'm probably in the minority there. Terrion Arnold, Cooper DeJean, and Enos Rakestraw are my top corners. So there's five corners that I would be over the moon if the Packers got any of those. What'd you say, Jake?
I was just going to ask if I could say something. I listened to a podcast yesterday at work, and I can't remember the guy. It was the Athletic podcast, and it was an old GM. I can't remember his name. It was either Greg or Randy. I want to say he was a GM of the Vikings at one point and another team. And he said that, in his opinion, Nate Wiggins is the best corner in this draft. And he says it's not even close. And then he went off to say that in his whole career, he allowed 8 first downs.
That's in college.
8 first downs at Clemson, going against arguably the best talent in the league. And he only was targeted, I think it was something like 42 times his senior year. And he allowed 19 catches, total.
And Jake, let me ask you this, man. What's the negative with Nate Wiggins? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Size.
Weight, right? Now, because when you say size, immediately you think, okay, height and weight. He's 6'1", 6'2", right? Somewhere around that range.
He's just a little
thin. So when you turn on the tape, though, this dude doesn't play thin, does he? No. He plays like a dog. So I'm with you, man. If we were to get Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Terrion Arnold, Cooper DeJean, or Enos Rakestraw at 25, I'm all about it, man. All about it. So those are the guys. And again, I got Tyler Newbin right there clustered with those four, worthy of the 22nd pick. But that RAS is going to keep him out of the first round. I don't see anybody spending a first round pick on Tyler Newbin.
So, why do you think about this, Clay?
Mm-hmm. So here's why I like Kool-Aid more than Arnold. Everyone talks about Arnold this year, right? Arnold was just, phenomenal this year. Kool-Aid McKinstry was a higher recruit coming out of high school, right? Someone asked the question earlier. It was several weeks ago. They said, do you think the reason that Kool-Aid looked so good was because Terrion Arnold was having to cover the number one receiver? It was actually the opposite. Kool-Aid McKinstry last year, if you were to look ahead to this year at the consensus big board, he was projected to be a top 10 pick. So to me, it was quite the opposite. I guarantee you Kool-Aid was having to cover the number one, and Terrion Arnold kind of boosts up a little bit. I'm not saying Terrion Arnold is a bad prospect. You see, I've got them right there in the same ballpark, right in the same ballpark here. So, again, I think Terrion Arnold is worthy of the 22nd pick. I know I'm in the minority and having Kool-Aid over Terrion Arnold, but that's the reason I put Kool-Aid over Terrion Arnold, is because he was the number one corner for Bama the last 2 years. And Terrion Arnold always automatically kind of comes at the top, and it makes you think the same conversation we've had, Jacob, about Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat, right? The same thing applies with cornerbacks. You got two great cornerbacks, two first-round talent cornerbacks on the same team. What are they being asked to do, right? Now, you go watch the tape and make the decision yourself. Now, the way it was explained to me, Kool-Aid McKinstry is an actual press corner, right? This is how Greg Cosell lined up. Kool-Aid McKinstry is an actual press corner. I think I've got the notes on my vertical board. Let me look real quick. I won't put it on the screen, but I'll read them to you guys because I try to make notes when people talk about these specific things. Yeah, here we go. So with Kool-Aid McKinstry, press man corner, okay? Now, when he talked about Terrion Arnold, he said Terrion Arnold is more of a mirror match press man. Now, what's the difference in that? Kool-Aid is more of a in-your-face, jam you at the line, get in the hip pocket. Mirror match press man is you're on the line and you're looking to mirror him every step of the way. It's essentially you're showing press, you get in their hip pocket, and you're mirroring them along the way. So what it comes down to, and like Greg Cosell, like Ross Tucker, like many other people, I think I heard Jim Nagy say this too, what it comes down to is, what would you rather have, a press man corner or a mirror match press man corner? And here's the thing. Their overall grade is so close together, you can justify either of them going over the other, in my opinion. least that's how my board sets. Now, when you look at why they are where they are on my board, Kool-Aid McKinstry in 2022, 40th highest graded corner in, according to PFF. In 2023, he jumped to 12th. The consensus big board had him at 12 back in January. The 33rd team had him in the 13th spot. Daniel Jeremiah has him at 36. Now, if you hop down to Terry and Arnold, let me just read these numbers to you guys. Who would you rather have if you have to choose off the 2022 PFF grade? The guy who's ranked 40th or the guy who's ranked 243rd? You're going with 40, right?
Yeah.
40 is Kool-Aid McKinstry. Okay. Now let's go to 2023 grade. If you had to choose between these two corners, one ranked 12th amongst corners. Okay. The other ranked 14th. Which one are you taking? The one that's ranked 12th is Kool-Aid McKinstry, right? Okay. The consensus big board back in January when the season ends, right? One was ranked 12th on the consensus big board. The other was 21st. You're going with the 12th. If you remove the names, right? You remove the style of play. This is just simply analytics here, right? And I'm not suggesting you guys know there's a reason there's multi-facets to my board is because this isn't like the secret glue, the secret, you know what I mean? The secret to the recipe of finding a good player. I'm just saying comparing it across the board. You go to the 33rd team. They had one 13th. They had the other one 31st. I'm going with 13th over 31st. That was Kool-Aid. Now, when you get to Daniel Jeremiah, former scout, he had Kool-Aid McKinstry 36th in his top 50, his first top 50 release, and he had Terry and Arnold 6th. So there's a check for Terry and Arnold. So essentially, you've got one of those boxes that's checked. Now, when you go to Kool-Aid McKinstry, his RAS, if I remember correctly, was in the sevens, right? He was in the seven range. He was doing it with a foot fracture, too. Keep that in mind, right? Terry and Arnold finished in the eights, and he was completely healthy. Right. So that you got to give that notch to Terry and Arnold as well. So and then, of course, with Greg Cosell, they both got bonuses. It sounded to me like Greg Cosell liked Terry and Arnold better than Kool-Aid McKinstry. But then he put that preface or that side note of, yes, I would put Terry and Arnold over Kool-Aid McKinstry. But the question is, would you rather have a press man corner or a mirror match press man corner? So they're that close. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Dennis in the chat says, Arnold is so good at mirror match. His hips swivel easier than Emilio's Buffalo Wild Wings bar stool.
Well, if you've watched this show enough, Dennis, you would know that Emilio was sitting on a hard stool. He didn't have a bar stool. He was on a hard chair. Remember his famous quote? God, I wish we could pull that up. He said, I spend way too much money sitting on these hard ASS chairs at B-dubs watching the Packers get beat every week.
He said on a 32-inch flat screen. 32-inch.
He even said from 20 feet away, didn't he?
Yeah.
So it's just the quote of the year from Emilio. So again, it just comes down to what's your preference. You know, you want mirror match, you want press man.
The answer to the question for me is Ennis Rakestraw Jr.
Exactly. Jesus. You can't make a decision. Just go to Ennis Rakestraw Jr. there. And that's what's wild. Like if on my vertical board, if you look at Ennis Rakestraw Jr., you know, I think that Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terry and Arnold are better than Ennis Rakestraw Jr. But what are you getting with Ennis Rakestraw Jr.? You're getting kind of that attitude, right? Like some of the notes that they put is super competitive. He's also a good run defender and he can play outside and in the slot. Those are the notes to him. So, again, a different type of corner. And they're all within that range together that you could justify, you know, one of those being taken. If this is what Goody's board looks like. We know it doesn't. But this is just a good example of like, okay, here's how these guys kind of match up. But with Ennis Rakestraw Jr., in 2022, his PFF grade, he was the 127th graded corner, if I remember correctly. In 2023, he was the 80th. The consensus big board had him in the 47th spot. The 33rd team has him at 17. Great grade there. And then, of course, Daniel Jeremiah had him in the 24 spot. So the other thing that hurts him, too, is the RAS. Right, Tim? We talked about that. He scored less than a 7. So there's probably zero chance that the Packers would take him in the first round because of that RAS. That's what sucks. That's the part that, like, every time I know how excited you are for Rakestraw and hearing other people talk about his competitive nature, I get excited about him too. But it's like, precedent suggests there's zero chance Scooty would take him in the first round. Now, if he
I'm hoping he drops a little.
If he falls to 41, game on. If you remove the names, I'm going to get hate for this, and it's okay because these are good exercises. If you remove the names and you looked at our needs and you said just specifically the grades of my horizontal board, this is the way I would go. See this cluster of corners. There's a decent chance that one of these guys falls to 41, and they're so closely graded together. Look at the safety position, right?
Yep.
You take Newbin at 25, people are going to go, oh, God, I'm tweeting at Clayton right now. He's such a moron. I'm just saying, if this is how their board sat, you would take Newbin at 25 and then still get one of those clusters of corners at 41 if this is how the board sat. Here's the problem. Newbin didn't have an 8 RAS either. Yep. So check him off according to precedent. So that's why we're all sitting here talking about it. It'll probably end up being our boy Graham Barton, somebody like that, right? So that's kind of how it lines up. Coach Lynn says the draft is about projection. Who do you project will be the better? Will be better in the scheme you are trying to deploy? Deployment is probably the most used word by Greg Cosell because it's absolutely huge. How are you going to deploy these players within your scheme? It's Coach Lynn's spot on with that. That's why, going back to Bill Belichick's comment, nobody knows how the draft's going to fall. You have no clue because you don't know. You may think you've got someone that runs the same defense year in and year out, and you don't know you wasn't in the building, and the coaching staff met back in, you know, February at the end of the season and said, all right, guys, we're going to change this up about our scheme. We need this type of player, right? And that's why someone might rise, not necessarily rise on their board, but be taken out of that cluster of guys because it fits their new deployment. So those are all the things that really matter when it comes to the draft for sure. Tavondre Sweat is very interesting to me, Jacob. You kept asking, is that how far he fell? I did not move him at all. Right, I did not move him at all on my board. That's where he would have been had he not gotten in trouble. Okay, so he's worthy of the 26th pick, but I was looking at over here, and let me drop this down. We'll get out of here because we're going to go way over if we get too deep into the weeds here, and we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. But when you talk about draft targets here, according to the 33rd team website, or I'm sorry, the mock draft database website, check this out. Projected, we talked the other day. Here's your projected picks. Let me do this real quick. There we go. The projected picks for 25 we talked about 41. When you get to 58, look who's in there now, Tavondre Sweat. So on the consensus big board, Jacob, he's fallen all the way to 63. So just to kind of give you an idea of where Tavondre Sweat sits now. Again, I still have him worthy of like 27th, 28th pick, but you've got the red marker going, all right, is that the guy you want to spend a first-round pick on? Probably not. So it looks to me like he's going to be dropping to the second/third round, possibly the fourth, because consensus big board is definitely not like the Bible of draft talk, right? So
I was going to say, I cannot believe that they have Mike Sanders still up there at 49. That's like
wild, isn't it?
Top tiers right there. That's the highest I've seen him personally.
Yeah, so they've got him in the 49 spot now. And if we were to go back to my horizontal board real quick, pop this up. Let's see what we see in Mike Sainristil, and then we'll look at the vertical board and kind of see some notes on him. So Mike Sainristil, I've got him right here with the 62.8, right? He was a Senior Bowl participant. That's what the S represents there. I've got him worthy of the 43rd spot. They had him at 49. I'm saying, yeah, you pick him at 41, it's worth it. You're right there in that ballpark. The problem is if Goody's board looks like this, Kamari Lassiter is slightly better than him. Now it comes back to deployment like Coach Lynn's talking about, in preference on the prospect. So on the vertical board, if we were to go to our boy that we were just talking about, not Kamari Lassiter, but Mike Sainristil, I don't have any notes on him, but someone was saying that he played – did he play slot? No, he was out. Yeah, so look at this. On the horizontal board, I've got – notice how it says Mike Sainristil, cornerback, dash, S, forward slash whatever, O, right? What that's saying is – he played the majority of his snaps as a slot corner and secondary as outside. So he is not technically, but he's got a lot of experience as a slot corner. So some teams may go into the draft and they're sitting there at 41. And like, what if we had not signed Keyshawn Nixon to that deal? You might be sitting here going, all right, who's the best slot receiver? Kamari Lassiter showing outside snaps. Ennis Rakestraw is one of those guys that could play slot, Tim. So there you go. But you get down here to Sanders still, that's where his value is he can be a slot corner. I've heard other people say he's undersized. I don't apply that stuff to my board other than maximum thresholds for the Packers. What's that, Bub? You going to say something, Jacob, or no? All right, I got an echo as well. So, cool. All right, anything else?
Yeah, it's still Ennis Rakestraw Jr.
That's all you need to know. The problem with Mike Sanders still is his name isn't Ennis Rakestraw Jr. Get that changed legally, we're good to go.
Figure that out.
Yeah. Jacob, you got anything else, Bob?
No, I can't believe that. Guys, we're like, what does Jake always say? Are we four sleeps? We four sleeps away?
Yeah. Oof. So it's here, man. It's here. This week is going to be hectic. I got to get the draft board printed, laminated, all that good stuff. Got to get that sent out to the posse on Patreon. It's going to be even good. Like I said, those last 12 hours, like Coach Belichick said, that's when you want to keep your ear to Ian Rappaport and those guys that are reporting stuff, because that's when real information is starting to come out and you're like, okay, here's where teams are leaning. Deadfish says, wonder if they're going to try Andre Dillard at guard. He said this on the front side of the show. It didn't kind of apply to what we were talking about, but I definitely wanted to hit it. I didn't even think about that, guys. Again, one of the big things with draft prospects is, as far as the thresholds, is they like interior offensive linemen with tackle experience, right? What if they did move Dillard to guard and he is a much better guard than he's played tackle at the NFL level? That's if a former 19th overall pick in the draft at tackle ends up being your starting right guard, I feel totally different about that signing now. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So that's a really good point there, Deadfish. Great point. Let's see here. Deadfish also said, got to go seeing if I can find brother Eric. Hope I don't end up behind him in the confessional line. I'd like to get home in time to catch the show tonight if you have one. So, Sutherland's going to be in the confessional line. Carly, of course, says, great, guys. I just recommended this pod to a friend with a teenager son, and she did the face palm. Yeah, Carly, look, we have no control over Eric Sutherland. I don't know what to tell you, okay? You apologize, but it is what it is. And then Jeff said this comment too. He said, I hope Denver calls and asks for 25, number 25 for this year, for next year's one. Yeah. They're going to suck. Could you imagine that? That's the other thing too. Like, if the team's trying to climb up. If the team's trying to climb up in the top round and they end up stinking next year, that could be a high first round pick if they do give up a first to get in the first round. That's pretty wild, you know.
Yeesh.
I'm hoping we trade back, man. It'll make kind of for an anticlimactic night one, but I think long run, it makes all the sense in the world for the Packers, for sure.
Yeah, it makes for night one, but then it's going to be an amazing night two. Like, yeah, night really two is going to be.
It's a great point, man. All right. Nothing else, right, guys? We good?
Yeah.
All right. Want to give a quick plug to this real quick. Ryan on Twitter, on X, is doing a giveaway, okay? And this is what his tweet says, @pack_daddy says, ready for the NFL draft, join our game and win big. Predict players, the Packers draft for a chance to win a $125 gift card to Fogo. Fogo is basically a Brazilian steakhouse. It sounds like they're nationwide. Should be able to find one close to you, I would imagine. He says you fill out the form and submit your predictions. And what he's got is a Google Docs set up there with a link if you go to that tweet. And you basically try to predict the Packers draft. And he says, two lucky winners will be chosen. Don't miss your chance to enjoy a delicious feast at Fogo. Here's the cool thing, too. If you're not in the area of a Fogo, you can find somebody who is. It can be a good little gift for them, too. And again, this is your way of this is everybody's way of being able to kind of get their draft voice heard with their, you know, mock draft predictions. Get that in, man. Get that in and enter yourself into that contest. The price on that entry fee is absolutely awesome. It is $0, okay? It is free. 99. So make sure you get yourself in there. But Tim, you good, man? You got anything?
Nope. Just a little hungry now after seeing that.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt. All right, guys, we're out of here. We'll be back tonight for PTA Live at 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us. Eric, make sure you get those confessionals in, all right, buddy? You're going to need it. And no, we're not putting that on the screen, guys.
I'm not going to. So quit asking.
For those of you listening on the pod, thank you for making us a part of your day. As always, let's go out and be the change we want to see in the world. And go Pack, go.